back to A Place for Film, the official IU Cinema podcast. My name is David Carter, your host, and joining me later on today's episode, we have composer and performer Daniel Whitworth, the winner of the John Vickers Scoring Award for 2021. I got to sit down and have a very brief interview with him last Friday, so it is a compact interview, but an informative one. I'm very excited for you guys to get to hear it. This week's episode will be very brief. There's not much on the schedule. Not a lot has actually happened since the last time I've done this. I mean, the Baz Luhrmann Elvis trailer dropped. I was very excited about that. Baz Luhrmann, I feel like either you're in or you're out. I don't really have any hot takes on it, and I hope Brittany isn't offended by this. Brittany Friesner, our associate director, who is a big Elvis fan and has programmed Elvis movies at the IU Cinema. I am not as much into the fandom of Elvis for my own reasons, but I'll be there day one to see that Baz Luhrmann Elvis movie because I love Baz Luhrmann, a maximalist director, you know, just everything overblown, over schedule, the most dynamic shot possible you can pick for every single setup. I have no idea what Tom Hanks is doing with that accent in this trailer. Don't know why we can't just hire character actors. We have to have people like Jared Leto and Colin Farrell put on fat suits and do crazy things because we can't hire character actors anymore. Anyway, I'll be there day one. It does look a lot like Walk Hard. It's crazy that we still make music biopics after Walk Hard has come out. Thought it would kill the music biopic. The fact that Popstar hasn't even killed the music biopic is insane to me. Granted, not a huge hit, but still. I'm sounding very negative. I'm very excited about this Elvis biopic. With all of Baz Luhrmann's 3 screenplay credits. When you watch the trailer for that, just take notice. Baz Luhrmann somehow has 3 screenplay credits. Other than that, as far as anything else kind of happening in the movie sphere, I think it's amusing that the Oscars has announced that there will be a fan favorite poll, or as someone on Twitter called it, the Oscars Kids' Choice Award, which is pretty transparently the way they were trying to kowtow to people demanding that Spider-Man No Way Home get an Oscar nomination because it's such a high grossing movie. And obviously the Oscar has this push-pull relationship with Marvel movies that is very entertaining to watch because they never will get... It's like Marvel and Netflix are these two entities that desperately want validation from the Academy Awards, and the Academy Awards only ever tiptoes up to giving it to them. And so they invented this fake category for Spider-Man No Way Home. And what's been happening is that the level of trolling that's been going on with the website that you have to vote on, it has not been Spider-Man leading the polls. It has been that Cinderella movie that no one really saw. I know Billy Porter is in it. It's like on Amazon. I don't really have much information besides that it was not very well received. That's been leading in the polls. I was secretly hoping for an Alita Battle Angel resurgence. And for those who aren't extremely online, the Alita Battle Angel fandom is crazy. Let's just leave it at that. That's been kind of entertaining to watch. So kind of curious how that's going to swing. Also kind of surprised the Zack Snyder Justice League cut people didn't come out for this one, or maybe they did come out, but the Cinderella hive is that strong. Yeah, that's pretty much all that's been going on in the movie sphere. So you can check news articles on the internet for those. Yeah, we have a very short schedule at the IU Cinema this week, so I'm actually not even going to give it its own segment because the only other thing besides the movie I'm about to talk about playing at the IU Cinema this week is Phil for Short, the John Vickers Scoring Award film that has been picked to be scored over. So I talked to Daniel about that later in this episode. So to highlight the screening for the week of February 21st, today at 7 p.m., it is free but ticketed. We have the 2019 film Bombshell, and just as I always do with all in-person screenings, I will just give you the advisory that masks are required for all attendees and the cinema staff at indoor events. Due to our limited screening schedule and currently reduced seating capacity, we strongly encourage patrons to buy tickets online in advance to avoid getting sold out, and there will be no standby line or late seating. This screening in particular has been curated by Timothy L. Fort of the Kelly School of Business with support from the IU Cinema, Kelly School Department of Business Law and Ethics, and the Kelly Institute. This partnership is supported through IU Cinema's Creative Collaborations Program. And there will be, after this film, a post-screening Q&A with Zoe Peterson, director of the Kinsey Institute's Sexual Assault Research Initiative, and with Brenda Weber, IU Professor of Gender Studies. This is directed by Jay Roach, who I think is the director of the at least first Austin Powers movie, if I'm not mistaken. Bombshell depicts sexual misconduct allegations surrounding Fox News' Roger Ailes. The film follows the lawsuit filed by anchorwoman Gretchen Carlson against Ailes, as well as the revelations by Megyn Kelly during the 2016 U.S. presidential campaign. Kelly also becomes a lightning rod for her questions of the subsequent attacks by candidate Donald Trump. The third woman profiled in the film is Kayla Papasil, a newly hired employee at the network who experiences harassment as well. And this contains depictions of sexual harassment. And once again, that is going to be today at 7 p.m. It is free but ticketed. And because I'm not quite sure I said anything about it, the specifics of the screening, the Fill for Short screening, which is Saturday, February 26th at 7 p.m., costs $8. And as I said, this is a silent film with live orchestral accompaniment. It is a world premiere score, which we will talk about with Daniel in just a few moments. And just a little background on what the John Vickers Scoring Award is. It is an annual award endowed by a gift from former IU trustee, the Honorable P.A. Mack Jr. This premiere presentation includes IU students in the roles of composer, conductor, musicians, audio technicians, projectionists, house managers, and ushers. And this is presented in partnership with the Jacobs School of Music. So with that out of the way, let's turn to our interview with Daniel, which was delightful. And as we dig into what it is like to compose for a silent film, how he got involved with the John Vickers Scoring Award, his influences, his passions, his style. So please join me there.
Dear Diary.
Well, my name is Daniel Whitworth. I am a recent graduate of IU's Scoring for Visual Media program, and I now live out in Seattle pursuing a career in freelance composition.
It is nice to have you on this episode, Daniel. As I said off microphone, thank you so much for doing this on short notice.
Of course.
Very excited about your program upcoming later this week at the IU Cinema. And so I just have some very basic questions for you that the audience might be curious about. You are the first John Vickers Scoring Award winner that we've had on the podcast. And so I think people are kind of interested in what that process is and like what it is like scoring a silent film. But before we get to that, just I kind of want to hear about your background as a cinephile, as a composer, as a musician.
Well, you know, growing up, I always loved music and film. I was always torn between pursuing one or the other, went with music. And then in undergrad, I realized that I could do music and film and combine my two passions in that sense. So circled around to a graduate program at IU, the Scoring for Visual Media program, and really enjoyed building on my classical composition background to study scoring and really explore that world. And now here I am trying to do that professionally. So that's kind of the the rundown of it.
What was your introduction to film? Because I would say when I was in music school, there weren't a lot of people who were that cross-section was really happening, this, you know, despite music being such a large, important part of film as a medium. So,
well, In undergrad, I was exploring acousmatic music or music concrète, which is like music using only electronics. And in order to create that music, you use a lot of the same technology and software that you use for film scoring. And I just kind of like in my exploration of that technology and that software became really interested in like virtual instruments and the whole scoring process, and then decided, you know what, I can do this for fun. I'm going to throw some silent films on the timeline and try to compose something to it, see what happens. And those little projects of me just messing around kind of became my application for IU's grad school scoring program.
In that same vein, what are your inspirations for film composition coming from like a classical background? And I know you are also a saxophonist, so I'm kind of curious how that colors the way that you compose, because one of my favorite composers is Berlioz, who is not a pianist, and I'm always interested in composers who don't have a keyboard as like the base of how they think about musical composition.
You're right that my background is in saxophone, and it's actually in classical saxophone. So like it's a lot of avant-garde, new music kind of stuff, obviously, because saxophone. Recently had the pleasure of playing tenor sax on a piece, Voices from the Killing Jar by Kate Soper. And it's like, you know, it's just a lot of textural kind of effects and stuff with the saxophone. And I I love that kind of music. I love performing it. I love writing it. So coming into the film scoring world, I am always really interested in scores that take advantage of like extended techniques and textural effects. So like horror movie scores are great for that, for example. Those tend to be the scores that I just really am always floored by.
Going to the John Vickers Scoring Award in Phil for Short, I just kind of curious from like step one to Saturday, how did this come about? How did you learn about it? What was the process like scoring a silent film? You know, where were you pulling from? Who are the people that you are talking to? What is the process of collaboration for something like this? I've talked to students who have participated in the short film program, Double Exposure, where it's Jacobs in the media school together working on short films. What is it like for you not working with an actual living director and you're just trying to interpret?
Well, the process of not working with a living director is absolutely great because I don't have to listen to anyone. I can just do whatever I want and no one's going to tell me no. But actually, it's unlike anything I've done before. You know, because a silent film, the soundtrack is such an important component. The soundtrack is also the sound design and it's half the film, really. Sometimes I kind of framed it like I'm writing a 90-minute piece of music with a film that accompanies it. Because the music needs to fire on all cylinders at all times. Whereas when you're scoring like a modern film, the music is very much like supplementary and kind of under the dialogue and just kind of in the background. Here it needs to be in the fore. It needs to always be expressing some kind of emotion in tandem with the film, transitioning quickly between different scenes. It's really all over the place. So it's definitely a huge challenge coming into a project like this with no real silent film scoring experience, but it was really rewarding exploring this entirely new medium, it felt like. And so you asked about the process beginning to end. So, in the beginning, it was just watching the film a lot, jotting down notes, really trying to understand the characters, and also trying to explore the sociopolitical ramifications of the storyline at the time. The film was very progressive. So trying to peel back those layers just to see how I could reflect that in the music. And then I wrote the film soundtrack from beginning to end linearly. Which I never do. But in this case, because it's just such a massive project, that was for me the only way to approach it. And it took about, let's see, I was working on it from around January 2021 and finished it that August. So about half a year.
Are you collaborating with anybody else in this project or is it just you in this short film? And then also the follow-up question I have to that is, when you were presented this short film, did it have a pre-existing like score, be it just piano accompaniment or full orchestration? And did you listen to that or did you try to avoid getting any sort of cross-contamination of ideas into your score?
Well, Gordon, your first question, it is just me as far as writing the music. Of course, I'm collaborating with an amazing team of audio engineers and all the music performers and stuff. But as far as the composing, it's just me. And for your second question, this film is unique in that it was actually kind of lost to time until recently. It was rediscovered and it was restored by the Library of Congress. So before now, there actually has not been a soundtrack for the film to go and listen to. And before this premiere, I don't believe it's been shown anywhere. I might be wrong about that. Either way, there's no soundtrack to go and listen to. So I was going into this completely blind. And I did prefer that way because it's nice to not have those expectations of like, this needs to match this standard soundtrack for this, or this is like the classic soundtrack that you're just going to be replacing. It's a clean slate. So I really felt like I had the freedom to do whatever I wanted, which was really great as a composer. You very rarely get to do that.
For the audience, because you've spent so much intimate time with this film, what is Phil for Short about and what drew you to it specifically? Did it inspire any specific ideas, like things for you to play around with the film? I'm assuming you've seen it probably dozens of times at this point. So
right. Yeah, definitely. Well, the film at its core, it's about challenging gender roles in the 1920s. And the main character is this young woman who does not subscribe to the traditional role of a woman in the 1920s. She dresses like a boy. She works on the farm. She studies Greek literature. And her neighbors are very bothered by that. They're very disturbed by her. And the beginning of the film, she sees her father die, and she finds herself in this arranged marriage with this grouchy old man from the town who just hates her, hates everything she stands for. So In order to escape, she disguises herself as a man and runs away to a university where she meets a professor and falls in love with him. And then the big twist, though, is that the professor is himself a raging misogynist who recently got out of a marriage where his wife betrayed him and cheated on him and stole all his money. And so he just hates women. He's terrified of them. He can't even stand to be in the same room as them. It's really over the top and goofy. And Phil is just fascinated by that, I guess, and relentlessly teases him and kind of terrorizes him until he falls in love with her. And so if you couldn't tell, it's kind of a screwball comedy, and it's a charming film. And I was drawn to it because it does have the sociopolitical layers and the commentary on gender, which is really interesting. But it's also just a really enjoyable film on the surface to just watch and laugh at and take in the scenery and the characters. So it was really a pleasure to work on this and to get the soundtrack to match all these crazy scenarios that they throw at you.
Did this inspire any particular orchestration that you worked with, or?
The orchestration was limited only by size because it was, you know, whatever we could fit in the IU Cinema's pit. And so we went with some strings, a flute, clarinet, bassoon, some light percussion, and a harp. So very, very basic, traditional kind of scoring orchestra. And the reason we went with that kind of instrumentation is because having that traditional sound really helps build a foundation that you can then deviate from, kind of like the film story does. You start the film with this very traditional, wealthy neighborhood and Phil growing up in this wealthy household and dealing with all these stuffy elite people. And so the orchestra kind of reflects that. And then as the story progresses, the instruments are able to do more different things and kind of subvert the expectations of that ensemble.
I like to always ask people this just because I'm nosy and like to pick people's brains. Who is a big inspiration for you as a composer, be it film composer or just in general?
Well, that's a tough question always, but I guess my biggest inspirations, especially throughout like undergrad as I was still finding my compositional voice, were the composers Joseph Schwantner, who I just adore his music. It's very tonal and very textural at the same time, which I think, you know, before I heard his music, I'd never really heard that kind of approach to tonality before. I also love George Crumb, who's another kind of pillar of contemporary music. And Kate Soper, who I mentioned earlier, having played one of her pieces, she just writes fantastic music. Those are all concert music composers. But I always take my concert music experience and like to bring that to film. So those are kind of the people that really inspire me musically.
So then the last thing I'll ask you is, what are you going to be working on next? And if you wanted people to listen to more of your compositions besides at the IU Cinema this upcoming Saturday, where can they find them?
Well, coming up next, I have a number of projects out here in Seattle. One of the most exciting is a commission from the Seattle Opera through their fellowship program for young composers. And so I'm writing a 20-minute chamber opera for them, and it just got cast recently, and that will be premiering in June. And so that's been really, really cool to work with all these incredible musicians. As far as finding my other music, you can go to my website if you're interested, danielwhitworthmusic.com. I have a ton of my film music, game music, and classical music up there.
Thank you so much for doing this, Daniel. I hope people come out to the Philfor short screening this Saturday. Will you be there, Daniel? Or I know you're in Seattle, so I didn't know if you were coming in for it in person.
I will. I'm flying in next weekend.
Well, please mask up and give Daniel their praises when you see them at the cinema this Saturday. So thank you so much, Daniel. It's been a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you, David.
Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode, Daniel. You were a pleasure to interview, and I hope all of you can come to Philfor Short on this upcoming Saturday. And with that, that's going to do it for us on A Place for Film. As always, you can follow the IU Cinema on various social medias, generally at IU Cinema. You can follow me on Twitter at Samurai Flicks, me on Instagram and Letterboxd at Robert Dolphy. Our theme song for the A Place for Film podcast is Chimney by Steve Alford and the Rational Discourse off of the album Live at the Mothlight. And with that, I'd like to thank you tuning in for another week of A Place for Film. I will see you at the movies. Good night.